This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. For most entrepreneurs, finding a competitive advantage means obtaining a way to beat out the competition. But for restaurateur Judy Wicks, discovering how much clients embraced her sustainable practices made her want to share them with other restaurants. Wicks is the founder of Philadelphia's White Dog Cafe, one of the nation's leading local food restaurants. In 2001, she co-founded BALI, the International Business Alliance for Local Living Economies. It's an organization of more than 30,000 businesses committed to compassionate economy. She traced her experiences in a book titled Good Morning, Beautiful Business. Judy joins me this evening for the North Carolina Southeast Regional Gathering of a Money and Meaning Summit. It is at 6:30 at Farrington Barn in Pittsburgh. But first, Judy Wicks joins us now on the State of Things. Welcome. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here with you.
Tell us about the White Dog Cafe, first of all, in Philadelphia. How did that get started?
Well, I started it in 1983 on the first floor of my house, originally just as a takeout muffin and coffee shop, and then gradually grew it into a 200-seat restaurant. And we really were known for several things, one being a pioneer in the local food movement, but also being kind of a center for dialogue on issues of public concern.
What were you thinking about going in? I mean, was this a business or was this a kind of a philanthropic enterprise for you and just a place to be and I don't care how much money I make? Or how did you approach this?
Well, I mean, definitely approached it as a business, as a small business. I lived upstairs with my family, two young children at the time. And I wanted it to be a place for neighbors to gather and eat good food from local farms. And I certainly wasn't thinking of it as a philanthropic organization, but really one that has good relationships with neighbors and with the environment.
And with your wholesalers and others as well. Talk about the relationships, then the business relationships you built and the kind of the ethical basis that drove those decisions and those relationships.
Well, yes, one of the most important things for me was to buy from suppliers. I say was because I want to make clear that I did sell the business 6 years ago. It continues, and that's a whole story in itself. But I was very careful who I purchased from, what my supply chain was all about. So first of all, I had a commitment to local farmers, but also when I did buy ingredients that came from outside of the country, I made sure that they were fair trade, you know, whether it was chocolate or vanilla or cinnamon, coffee, tea, and so on. But it was really the local farmer relationships that were most important to me. I really wanted to have fruits and vegetables that were fresh and organic. And in particular, I was very dedicated to making sure that I knew where my meat came from and that the animals were raised in a humane way on pasture and able to have their natural habits respected and appreciated rather than these big factory farms with the confinement in the small cages, which I found to be horrific.
Those horrific conditions, of course, drive at least prices at the checkout stand. There are other prices that we all pay for industrial agriculture, particularly in our taxes. But the fact is, it looks to the consumer like it's cheaper, and that's a big deal when it comes to corporations. How do you do that? How do you stay in business and pay more for your stuff at the wholesale level? Or do you pay more?
Well, I'm sure that when it comes to the meat, that we did pay more for animals that were handled in a compassionate way because you're right that the factory farm system is really set up to maximize profits. I always like to think of it. In fact, a farmer pointed this out to me, that successful farming is a balance between masculine energies of efficiency and feminine energies of nurturing. And there's probably no worse example of the imbalance than the factory farm system, which is all about efficiency and no nurturing whatsoever. It's all about, you know, how little space can we give that chicken, how little light, how little food and water, and to make the most amount of profit. So in terms of, yes, we did pay more for our eggs and our chicken and our pork and beef and so on. And we did charge a little bit, but more than other restaurants in my neighborhood, but when I looked around the city at what prices there were in other, you know, foodie type places, you know, with really great local food and so on, you know, we were on par. And there were certainly places that were selling factory farm meat that charged the same thing I did, or even more. You know, you know, I think what came from this is that our customers really trusted the White Dog. That they knew that if they came there, they didn't have to fear about how the animals they were eating were raised, or the fish either. We had a commitment to sustainably caught, line caught fish rather than fish caught in these big nets with all the byproduct killing of other sea creatures and so on. And so our customers trusted us, and people came there because they knew that they could eat anything on our menu and feel good about it.
And you also realized that along the way that for you to do well, the fact that you were doing well was information that you could share with even competitors. Was that a difficult decision for you to make initially, the idea that you were going to start sharing this model with competitors?
Yes, and you know, it certainly wasn't my intention in the beginning. Like most business people, I wanted to do the best in my own restaurant, and I wanted to, you know, I felt that it was very important to have responsible practices, and I thought that that was enough. If I bought from local farmers and you know, had other environmental practices, that was all I needed to do. And when I finally got to the point where we had found all the sources for, you know, eggs and milk and beef and pork and so on that were humane local sources, I thought, gee, I'm finished now. Look at my menu is humane, and we've done it, and this is going to be our market niche, and this is all about us and so on. And then I realized that if I really did care about those farm animals and cared about the pollution caused by the factory farms and the unhealthy meat that the consumers were eating, that I would share my proprietary information of who my suppliers were with my competitors. And when I first thought about this, I was afraid to do it. I thought, gee, you know, my sales are going to go down, my profits are going to go down, maybe I'd go out of business, you know, all these scary thoughts and so on. But it was really in a sense, it was my love, you know, for animals, you know, for the environment, for the local farmers and so on, that gave me the courage, really, to share my supplier list with my competitors. And so we started a nonprofit, and I printed up all the sources with phone numbers and what each farm carried. And we were buying from maybe 20 farmers at the time. And I started a little nonprofit called Fair Food, and it was the job of the Fair Food director to go around to the other restaurants in town and give them the list of our suppliers and actually help them to learn how to buy from farmers, because it's not all that easy. And so that's really was a turning point in my life, where I saw that it wasn't just what I did in my own restaurant, that there's no such thing as one sustainable business, that we can only be part of a sustainable system. And in order to build that system, we needed to cooperate and partner, including with our competitors.
Well, and the fact is, not only did you not go out of business, your business flourished, as did theirs. So it's an example of a kind of generative economy. Instead of extracting
exactly
wealth the way corporations do, by taking their profits, sending them to their shareholders wherever they may live, at whatever price to the local community, you're generating more wealth and more businesses, and it doesn't draw from you. It doesn't drag you under. And in fact, you're saying the opposite happened. Everybody did better.
Exactly. And together we built a strong local food system.
You learned some of this in your days as a Vista volunteer, didn't you?
Well, yes. I think it was a real important chapter in my life to live with Eskimos, live with indigenous people as a Vista volunteer in Alaska, where I witnessed a culture based on cooperation and sharing, which was a sharp contrast to the way that I grew up in the rest of the United States, where it was really about competition and hoarding the most. That's how we measure success, how much material goods we can hoard, where the Eskimos really shared amongst each other. And that was a real lesson to me. I didn't realize it at the time, but I feel that that was really foundational in my learning experience to witness such a culture.
If this works, this kind of cooperative environment in, you know, you can understand it in the food business where people are willing to pay a little bit more if that's what it does cost for healthy, sustainable food, maybe in the service industry. What about manufacturing? How far do you think you can take this idea of cooperative generative economies? Are there limits in our current environment?
I don't think there's ever a limit to cooperation and generosity. You know, I feel that that's the direction that our whole economy needs to turn towards, not only cooperating with each other, but, of course, cooperating with nature, because our lack of cooperation with nature is, as we environmentalists know, is really destroying the life on Earth, you know, destroying the natural systems that support us all. So I think that the whole spirit of cooperation is really a big and important topic of how we can work together with other people and with nature to create an economy that's not only environmentally sustainably but socially just and really serves the needs of all.
Judy Wicks, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome. I'll see you tonight.
See you tonight. Judy Wicks, entrepreneur and author. Her book, Good Morning, Beautiful Business. And Judy joins me this evening for the NC Southeast Regional Gathering, a Money and Meaning Summit at 630 Farrington Barn at Pittsburgh. Just ahead, author Ron Rash talks about the mystery and romance in his new novel, Above the Waterfall. You'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.